Welcome to the Analytics Drill Down Podcast, brought to you by Oracle Analytics Cloud, your story powered by data.
My name is Dan Smucker. Welcome to another episode of the Analytics Drill Down Podcast. In today's episode, we're discussing a variety of topics around analytics, including machine learning and artificial intelligence, and the impact it's having everywhere around us. Before I introduce our guest, I want to introduce my co-host, Michael Singer, Director of Product Marketing for Oracle Analytics Cloud. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Dan. And so today we have Dr. Kirk Born as our guest. Now, Kirk is often touted as a top worldwide influencer in big data and data science. Currently, he's the principal data scientist and an executive advisor at Booz Allen Hamilton, where he advises senior leaders. And of course, he consults with clients on the value of data, data science, and machine learning. Now, before Booz Allen, did you know that Kirk was a professor of astrophysics and computational science at George Mason University? And prior to that, Kirk spent nearly 20 years supporting data systems activities for NASA space science missions. And that includes a role at NASA's Archive Project Scientist for the Hubble Space Telescope.
Wow. Wow, Kirk. You've accomplished a lot. I don't think we've even gone through all your accomplishments. So is there anything you really haven't done?
I'm sure there is a lot.
I doubt it. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was too busy on those jobs to do much else.
You once stated in a TEDx talk that we, humans, are all born scientists. We're always asking questions leading to more questions. Can you explain how this is impacting the evolution of AI? And will we continue to ask questions, or will AI ask the questions for us?
Well, I think question generation, for me, is like the highest form of analytics. If you start at sort of the lowest ladder of analytics maturity, it's descriptive analytics, which is basically what has happened in the past, which you call hindsight. And you can move up to more real-time, which is diagnostic analytics, or future-looking, that is foresight, which is predictive analytics. If you really want to get to the highest level, it's like, don't answer the questions that you previously thought of, but let the data dictate what the questions are you should be asking. And so in AI, that basically means no matter what the sort of the form that AI takes, it should be sort of cognitively aware of its surroundings and saying, am I making the right decision? Am I doing the right thing? You know, am I taking the right action in the context that I see in front of me? So of course, the AI is not going to be asking a question in the same way we ask ourselves that question, but it'll take into account all that contextual data flow to make the optimal decision in a given situation. And something as simple as maybe just like a recommender engine on an e-commerce website recommending products to you. And those recommendations really should depend upon your context. For example, if you are on vacation or you're at home or you're at your job, if the website, the e-commerce site, recognizes you're at one or the other of those three choices, then maybe the recommendation to you would look completely different. Also time of day and whether it's a weekend or a work day. Again, context matters in terms of what kind of action is made by the AI. So I think that is what we call sort of question asking, that is, am I doing the right thing? And in the AI sense, it's not so much producing a question, but is recognizing that it needs to think about all those contextual variables before moving forward.
Okay, so it won't take over our brains. That's good.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so.
So talking about doing the right thing, obviously we talk a lot about analytics on this podcast and everywhere else and how it's helping businesses become more efficient and gaining insights. But now you often talk about the notion of analytics for good. Can you help us through that definition and what's been your involvement in that cause?
Well, analytics for good, or data science for good, or just data for good, social good, is really sort of the part of the DNA of the data science community. And I think since the beginning, many different groups, individuals, organizations, et cetera, have taken upon themselves to use the power that comes from data and analytics to further social causes, medical diagnoses, solving social problems, or just improving outcomes and opportunities and services to people. So it's really a part of, again, the sense that we have power in our hands. And, you know, maybe it's like that quote from an old movie, which was actually a quote from the philosopher Voltaire, who said, "With great power comes great responsibility." And I think data scientists realize we have power in our hands because knowledge is power, and data and the information contained in the data and the knowledge that that represents gives us power to do things and improve things. So it's not just about improving our businesses and the bottom line, you know, the revenue and so forth. There is really a greater societal benefit in things that we are doing. And so people have, you know, taken charge, so to speak, of that power and harnessed it in ways that can be used, you know, beyond just our business, but into, you know, other social contexts. And so companies can do that by contributing, you know, through hackathons to social causes in their communities or even worldwide things, or encouraging their data scientists to participate in such things. So there's many sort of different ways we can go about doing it, either through encouraging it or actually sponsoring it or actually making it just part of our business model. And so at the company I work at, with, it is part of our business model. We make significant investment, both in terms of committing people's time and financial and other resources of our business to social causes using data science.
That's great. I think you just mentioned it, but, like, you know, how do you see businesses grabbing hold of this notion of analytics for good? What is their role in educating the world about this notion of analytics for good, how it could be a positive catalyst for change? You know, I think you mentioned a few, but can you think of some others?
Yeah, well, I think, for example, sometimes just sponsoring a local hackathon can be a fairly simple way that a business can do it. In some sense, it can provide, I mean, a sponsorship might just be providing office space, a conference room space, you know, for a local charity to participate in some kind of data hackathon. So it doesn't have to be like a major investment. It can be something that's important and significant without, you know, being, you know, financially major, but in terms of the value you're delivering, it's major. So it's just, you know, so giving people space, giving access to data, if you have access to data that can provide some insights into, you know, some social question, whether it's, you know, again, community based or, you know, nationally based or otherwise. I think it's you just sort of keep your eyes open, and I think it's one of the best sources is really just to talk to your data scientists and say, well, what do they care about? I mean, we had a data hackathon in my company a couple years ago, which was for pet shelters. So one of my colleagues, he actually was working with a pet shelter in his community, and one of the things that the pet shelter people that he talked with were concerned with is that sometimes a stray or a pet that gets adopted by another family, you know, shows up in different pet clinics, and they don't have the equivalent of an EHR, electronic health record, for pets, right? Right. So how do you know if this pet has had its shots, or what kind of treatments it has had in the past? So he said, can we do something to integrate the databases from across just this local community? I mean, we're not talking like a global solution or even a regional solution, just within one city. Just can we integrate the databases so that when pets show up, we can know how to treat them based upon their history? And so it was not a complicated hackathon in the sense of we weren't building like deep learning models with advanced machine learning. It was more about how do we clean data and integrate data and do that cross identification. That is this pet in this pet clinic the same animal that showed up in this other pet clinic? And you could tell by, you know, different characteristics of the pet as it's described in their database. And then you can do this cross match with a fairly high accuracy. And again, using the skills of data scientists to work with data, clean data, prep data, integrate data, that became a valuable solution for that community.
And I imagine that hackathon doesn't take a long time to put one of those together for, you know, for a long period of time. And you could solve these problems in relatively not easy fashion, but, you know, with a lot of people, a lot of brain power all together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for example, what my company did to support this is we provided one of our conference rooms on a Saturday provided some, you know, minor amount of advertising because anybody in our local community was invited to come. And we provided pizza and soft drinks and bottled water.
Wow.
So there were, it was not a major expense to do something that was a significant value to that community.
Fantastic. And, you know, obviously you're helping out the dogs and the dog owners as well. Let's talk a little bit about then, you know, how we are, you know, benefiting from artificial intelligence. And to some extent, people do lump in this term machine learning into that conversation. Do businesses really need to know the difference between those two sort of concepts? Are they intermixed? And are there dangers in not separating the two or at least understanding the concepts behind the two?
I personally think there's a bit of danger. I wouldn't say danger in a catastrophic sense, but in terms of a mental model of what you're doing, in the sense that machine learning, I always like to remind people, is simply a class of mathematical algorithms that the way it's defined, machine learning are algorithms that learn from experience. Now, that sounds kind of vague, but what that means is it recognizes, detects, and recognizes, again, patterns in data. So that's what we mean by experience. That is, once you see a pattern, you can encode the pattern through these algorithms and then recognize it the next time it appears. So if you're classifying a disease or you're classifying a customer or you're classifying some event in your web logs or whatever, once you've seen that pattern in the past, you can recognize it again and classify and take the appropriate action. So machine learning by itself is just really mathematics. And so sometimes people who, you know, have concerns about AI and taking over the world, we've seen so many movies that people have thought now that this is what AI is. It's robots taking over the world, and therefore machine learning must be something evil. And I'm quick to remind people that it's just basic mathematics, and the application of mathematics might be inappropriate or appropriate, but the mathematics itself is neither. It's just mathematics, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes people say, is AI a subset of machine learning or vice versa? And I think it's actually, in some sense, it's both, right? because machine learning is, again, a set of mathematical algorithms. If you apply those algorithms to discovery from data, we call it data science or data mining. If you apply the same machine learning algorithms to business operations, we call it operation research. If you apply the same algorithms to business decision making, we call it decision science. If you apply it to robotics and machines, we call it artificial intelligence. Okay, so machine learning has a lot of applications, including AI. Now, you can turn that around and say, well, AI is a lot more than just machine learning. It also includes actual sort of devices, sensors, infrastructure, mechanics, if you will. So an autonomous vehicle can be considered an AI, a car that drives itself, can be considered as an artificial intelligence. But there's a lot more than just algorithms there. There's wheels and tires and steering columns and sensors and many things. There's computing infrastructure definitely is part of AI. So in some sense, they're both fairly encompassing terms that maybe the best way to think of it is two large Venn diagrams which have a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
So is it confusing? You know, do you think companies are able to take full advantage now of using machine learning in their business? You know, and if not, like what's the primary reason that they can't?
Well, I think taking full advantage is a pretty strong statement that even the best companies, even the strongest company doing this stuff, are probably not quite there. Even you know, sort of the major internet companies have, you know, in just in the last couple of years, basically announced that they're really going, you know, full speed into AI. Some companies use the phrase "we are AI first." That is that's sort of like whatever product or service they deliver, they think first about what is the AI that is in there or can be in there or should be in there. And so even the largest companies in the world who have embraced this stuff for a very long time are still, you know, on that growth curve in terms of implementation. So, but the sort of your average business hasn't even started on that journey or at near the early stages of that journey. So there's lots of low-hanging fruit that companies can implement to get started on their journey if they're not there yet. But I think sort of the spectrum of benefits is large, and no one should feel like they can't get in on the game, or that it's too late to get in on the game.
Do you see any roadblocks in that? I mean, you know, as far as is it ease of use, or is it something else that is maybe causing them not to get up to speed as fast?
Well, there's quite a few. Yeah, there are quite a few roadblocks, actually. One of the strongest is the cultural side of it. That is being able to, in some sense, if you're going to have sort of this AI or machine learning help you make, you know, help in the sort of the decision making or in operations in some aspect of your business, that sort of means letting go some authority, so letting go some of the decision making, if you will, in the organization. Sometimes that happens at the top of the executive chain, or sometimes it happens, you know, in the rank and file employees who think their jobs are at risk, so therefore they don't want to get involved with this. So that's a cultural thing. There's also the talent problem, which is there's not enough people in the world who know the stuff. There's also the infrastructure problem, which is you do need, you know, access to computing hardware and other kinds of, you know, software infrastructure to make all this work. Mm-hmm. And some of that is made easy by, you know, a lot of this stuff is now being put into the cloud. So I think one of the advantages of cloud, like I just call it rent a supercomputer. So cloud, yeah. Basically, cloud allows you to do some, you know, high-performance computing without owning a high-performance computer. And if you only need 2 minutes of an algorithm to churn away in a massive amount of data on some cloud infrastructure through one of these major internet providers, then you will. That's all you need. You just pay for those few minutes, and then you give it back, and you don't have to pay any more cost. So there are opportunities to really step into this without too much investment of new resources or new infrastructure. You know, but I think that cultural hurdle is hard, large, and sort of the talent hurdle is also large, because you need people who are knowledgeable and able to do this.
Stepping onto that, the cultural question, it does seem like it is a question of trust in some cases. I mean, let's say, for example, you've got a chief data officer, and they provide a set of numbers, and the rest of the management team, as you said, you know, they're going to culturally look at those numbers, and they're going to say, okay, they're going to probably agree with whatever the CDO says in their findings. But oftentimes when we say, you know, are you asking the right questions? The question potentially is, what if the data is incomplete or limited in scope? And now organizations are facing that same dilemma internally. I mean, that's the case, correct? I mean, how does a CDO ensure a pool of data can be interpreted in the same way? And how do you get to trust that data that we gather?
That's a big question,
big
right?
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a
big question, a lot of answers.
Strange questions in one there. I'll back up to the sort of to the top of that question, if I can say it that way. Yeah. The chief data officer often is seen as the person who's sort of the data governance leader. That is the person who is responsible for ensuring compliance, you know, with regulations, and there's a lot of that being discussed this week. Since the you know, data protection regulations go into effect in Europe, but also impacts worldwide corporations. So the CDO, chief data officer, is looking at governance, compliance, accessibility, usability, quality, issues like that. But the officer is really the person building the models and doing the analytics, doing the data science, or doing the machine learning. Sometimes those people are called chief data scientists. I've heard of chief algorithm officers. There's all kinds of new officers in the executive suite. You know, chief experience officer. That is, how to use the data to improve customer experience or employee experience. So all these people together, I guess, would make up the data team. And if the data quality is a problem, in a sense, the breadth of the data, the ability for the data to solve the problem you're trying to answer, and there may be some incompleteness or limited scope in the data, then again, the people who are building the models as well as you know, those who are governing the data need to have that conversation. And so I think at any point in time, what we need to recognize now is sort of this sort of a horizontal view of business now, and that is people should be empowered all across the organization to be able to speak up, you know, when they see something in the data, whether that's a problematic thing in the data or an opportunity in the data. And I've heard of a company once that basically said that they've empowered data usage from the front office to the back office in their business. So any person in their business who sees something in the data that can improve customer service or customer products or customer interaction or whatever, you know, improve the business in some way, they are empowered to bring that forward. So it's not just the executive suite, or it's not just some data science team somewhere in the business who has the power to do this. Everyone should be part of that conversation, and especially when there's issues with data quality or incompleteness.
Interesting. So speaking of improving, so I recently read about a New York Subway MTA looking at an ML, machine learning AI solution to help commuters get to their destinations more efficiently by analyzing patterns in the subway system, potentially creating an easier color coding map, and ultimately improving the navigation between the subway lines. What do you think? You know, this is a practical application of machine learning, artificial intelligence. Can you think of some other examples of how machine learning is, you know, being used today?
Yeah, I think that one way to think about machine learning, again, it's as I said, it's these algorithms that recognize and see patterns in data. And sometimes what pattern means to a human is connecting the dots, right? You see that, you know, some things are related to one another. So that's what we call, you know, knowledge. Human knowledge is when you see the connection between what otherwise would be separate pieces of information. And so that correlation relationship. So a subway map is an example of connecting dots. We see that the most efficient way from person to get from, you know, A to Z might not be through every letter of the alphabet, but through some, you know, shorter pathway. And the same way with other business operations or human behaviors or human interactions with their world or with one another, how can we improve those interactions? How can we improve those services and outcomes? And again, it's about finding the efficient, most meaningful and interesting way through whatever sphere we're moving in. And I mean, one example, just trivial example, is just like autocomplete and text messaging on your phone. Believe it or not, that's an AI. It's when you're typing words in your text message and it suggests a word that you're typing. So you just click on, you know, pops a pick list of words, and that's the one I want. Or it does autocorrect. Or sometimes we recognize that there's a failure. We send words we didn't mean to send.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not perfect.
I'm glad it happens to everybody else, too.
Hell yeah, not just me. My wife and I are really good at that. We're always like, send a message, and then we immediately follow that with another message. Okay, but I didn't mean this, I meant that. And so we just have a shorthand code for that now, instead of writing out the whole thing.
Yeah.
Not there. X, and then Y or something. Y, not X or something like that. So in other words, we can shorthand or error correct, if you will.
Yeah.
So so again, minimizing the amount of typing we have to do is a way of making our communications with one another more efficient, and AI is helping to do that. So whatever it is, I think it's about efficiency in it. And so I'm a big believer that AI is really not about artificial intelligence at all. I mean, I really just don't like artificial in front of that word. I talk about AI as assisted intelligence or amplified intelligence or actionable intelligence, adaptable intelligence, things like that. So it's really assisting us, amplifying our productivity, providing, you know, improvements in ways that the machine can be better at it than we on our own could be. So I think you see it everywhere. I mean, I could imagine someone writing a very large encyclopedia of all the applications of AI that already exist in the world, and not the least of which are like the recommender engines that you now see on every e-commerce store, everywhere you go. And even I've seen this in some of our government client websites, where they when citizens come to a particular government website for a service, they're looking for some information or some government service. The website can now recommend other content that is related to the question the person has, and so it's just an AI in the background recognizing in the pattern of what you're looking for is similar to what other people have looked for, who also found this other piece of information useful in their particular search.
I like your definition.
Everywhere, we just don't recognize it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I like your alternative definitions of the A for the AI. Would you add accelerated into that list as well? It seems to me that you can always get assisted this and that or augmented. But what about it sounds like people really want their things faster, their answers faster, or their suggestions, or the decision making process to be sped up. Would you accept accelerated in that list?
Yes, yes. In fact, I think that was I have a list of five somewhere.
Oh, okay.
I think five alternatives to artificial intelligence, and I'm pretty sure accelerated was one of them. And you're exactly right.
Huh.
And especially if you think about it in the business context, how do you accelerate sort of decision making in business, or accelerate, solving a customer problem or solving a business problem? So AI can assist with that because it can find more quickly the anomaly or the pattern in the data, or even what we call prescriptive analytics. It can find an optimal solution to a particular challenge problem more quickly than a human could. So accelerated intelligence is definitely should be on that list.
Yeah. And your role as a data scientist yourself, and your fellow data scientists that you come into contact with, it sounds like your role is to actually educate others on the usefulness of this and the, how to basically, spread the good news about the about what you guys are doing. Is that where you guys are seeing yourselves at this point?
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So when people ask me, what do I do as the principal data scientist, I'm quick to point out, first of all, that I am just one of 1,000-plus data scientists at Booz Allen, and we're actually growing at the rate of about 1,000 per year, and our goal is to have 5,000 within the next 4 years, I guess, now that we're at 1,000 already. And among all these data scientists, we have many chief data scientists. And those chief data scientists are in charge of different accounts. That is the health account, or military, or veterans, or whatever. Transportation, energy, you name it. So those people are basically responsible for sort of developing the business around that domain and growing the talent in that domain. But our company has one principal data scientist, and that's me. And my role is basically to be that advocate, that evangelist, or I just call myself the data science mascot. So I cheer the team on. but I stand up, and again, as you're saying, I basically tell the story of what are the benefits. What are your options? What can you do with the data you have? What kind of questions? People identify their questions, because sometimes people don't know how to express their question in a way that that would make sense to an algorithm. And so I'm saying, are you trying to detect something, predict something, optimize something? So those are different use cases. And then, of course, we've been talking about data types. Do you have databases or images or text documents or surveillance video or satellite images? So all these things need to be talked about, and then we get down to here's what we can do with these types of data to answer that type of question. And so I'm good at having that conversation, and I know when to step back and let our brilliant Python and R programmers take over and do all the cool stuff, and our cloud people and infrastructure people do all their cool stuff. I know I'm not that person, so I'm perfectly comfortable in my role.
I think you probably do.
I call it talking the walk. I talk the walk. I mean, so other people can walk the talk, but I talk the walk. I'm not going to try to be the one to implement.
I'm sure you do plenty of cool stuff, but I'll tell you what, at the Analytics Drill Down podcast, we like to end the show with a little game called the Fast Forward Prediction Game, where I state a prediction and you tell me green light, that's agree, or red light, disagree.
Sure, as long as you don't ask me to explain myself.
Yeah, no problem. So, all right, first question. 5 years from now, most humans will be aided or touched in some form or another by machine learning.
Solid green light.
Like glowing green, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Neon green.
Okay, question.
Las Vegas green.
Yeah. Question two. And we didn't really talk a bit about the backlash of AI or the fear of it, but in a few years, do you feel like the fear factor of artificial intelligence will have increased to a point where there's going to be an extreme bias around, say, hiring practices or other algorithms?
So if you're asking me if I agree in a negative outcome,
right?
I'm not sure whether a green light or a red light is the appropriate metaphor in this case, but I think there will be instances of that, and I think we need to be careful about that. So I'd say a flashing yellow light in this case.
Okay, all right. Sounds good. So the third question, artificial intelligence and machine learning will require radically new skill sets for data scientists and a shift in how businesses are organized. I guess in the near future.
Yes, green light. Maybe it's not so radical because I think people are moving in that direction, but it's still green.
Right. Excellent.
Okay, final question. You obviously have seen the Boston Dynamic four-legged robot. In the future, are we going to see AI-driven dogs that fetch your slippers or even an open door for you?
Yes, but I really wonder whether this dog needs to look like a dog.
Right.
So maybe that's a green light, but let me use this other example. So back in the early 60s, there was a TV show called The Jetsons.
Yes.
And they had the robot maid, right, which looked sort of like a maid. It even had an apron on. but you know what? We have this little vacuum cleaner that roams around our houses, which looks more like a Frisbee. So it doesn't look like a maid, but is doing essentially the function of the maid. So I think the dog that fetches our slippers or opens the door may not look like a dog, but maybe it has the behaviors of the dog. I guess if it barks when strangers come to the door because it's using some kind of AI sensor to recognize a stranger or a familiar face through some surveillance camera on the door, that would be really cool and interesting, so I don't have to get up out of my chair. There's a traveling salesman coming to my door that I don't want to answer the door.
We may not be too far away from that, huh? So, excellent. Well, thank you. We've been speaking with Dr. Kirk Bourne, one of the top data scientists in the world. Kirk, thank you so much for being a guest on our show.
It was a great pleasure talking with you today. Thank you.
All right. Thanks once again for listening to the Analytics Drill Down podcast. For more information, visit oracle.com/analytics.